Thanks, Ashwin. I should thank the organizers for inviting me here. It's been a wonderful time in Santa Barbara. So today I'm going to tell you some recent development in the classic topic of composite Fermi liquids. So half or more than half of my talk will be from my papers with Cento in these three papers. But for the other half, I'll be talking about some work in progress together with Nigel Cooper, Artie Stern, and Bert Halperin. So there are quite a few related works with overlap, particularly the whole thing really started with a paper from Dan Song more than 1 year ago. And of course, there was the paper from Max and Ashwin that occurred the same day together with ours. All right, so here's the agenda. I'll first introduce very briefly what composite Fermi liquids are. And then I'll talk about, I'll introduce you the old issue of particle hole symmetry in the problem of composite Fermi liquids. And last year, the community came up with a beautiful solution to this issue called Dirac composite Fermi liquid. And thanks to Max's talk before the break, I can actually be quite reasonably brief on this. I can tell you the story very quickly. Then I'll talk about some new insights, some surprise actually, from the old HRR theory that it turns out to be working better than probably anybody anticipated. That actually suggests maybe some kind of duality between the two approaches. I'll elaborate on it more later. And probably the wonderful thing is we can actually come up with some predictions that's at least in principle measurable. So I guess I can be quite brief on this. So the problem of half-field lambda level, so if I have two-dimensional electron gas in a perpendicular magnetic field, of course, at free electron level that I get quantized lambda levels. Each lambda level has a huge degeneracy that's given by the number of flux quanta in the plane. And if I have a partial filling of a single lambda level, I get a huge degeneracy, a degeneracy that's exponential in the system size. And that has to be lifted by electron-electron interaction. So this intrinsically strongly interacting problem that give rise to the entire zoo of interesting states, including the fractional quantum Pauli states and so on. And at half filling, empirically we know that the state is a compressible state. It looks like a metal. Right? So how do we make sense of it? Because I have electrons in a strong magnetic field. They don't even move in straight lines. How do I get a metal? The brilliant idea came more than 20 years ago, was that instead of thinking directly about the electrons, I can think about what's called composite fermions. So it's really a composite, a combination of an electron and a 4-pi vortex. Okay. So if I have 4-pi vortex attached to an electron, this composite guy is still a fermion, as you can see quite easily. And the magic is that if I do this at half filling, this composite fermion effectively sees no average magnetic field. So it's capable of moving in straight lines. The Lorentz theory, the most natural Lorentz theory one can guess, is a simple Fermi surface that couples to an emergent dynamical U1 gauge field little a, where the gauge field little a has a Chern-Simon term level 1/2. And exactly at half filling, you can see that the total flux from the combined gauge field, the dynamical little a and the background capital A, they cancel. So the composite fermions form a metal. Okay. So that's the classic idea of a Halperin-Lee-Reed, now known as HLR state. If I deform this composite Fermi liquid away from half filling by changing, let's say, the magnetic field or density, so I can get a sequence of gapped fractional quantum Hall state by essentially filling integer level number of levels for the composite fermion, and that's known as the chain sequence of fractional quantum Hall. Okay, so that much is great. But there is the this nagging issue, which is known as the particle hole symmetry. So imagine a situation where my gap between the lambda levels is huge. Right? Formally, that's let's say taking the bare electron mass equal to zero limit. So in that limit, everything should be just controlled by a single lambda level. Right? And there is an exact symmetry in a single lambda level if I'm at half filling with two-body interaction, known as the particle hole symmetry. So it's an anti-unitary symmetry, like a little bit like time reversal, except unlike time reversal, it also flips the charge. So if you like, it's like a CT symmetry. So it takes CI, go to CI dagger, where CI is an electron annihilation operator restricted to a single lambda level. Sorry. So an old puzzle is that if I look at the HLR Lagrangian, it doesn't looks like it doesn't have that symmetry, because this is a symmetry that looks like time reversal with additional charge conjugation. But if you look at this transignment term, it certainly doesn't look invariant under this kind of symmetry. So what's going on? So last year, there was started with Dan Song, really. We came up with this interesting resolution to the problem. So you start by actually reformulating the problem of single field lambda level using Dirac fermions. So if I have a single Dirac fermion with a chemical potential at charge neutrality, so now I turn on a perpendicular magnetic field. And it's well known that if I have a Dirac fermion under a magnetic field, I form a zero lambda level. These are essentially the zero modes of the Dirac fermion under a magnetic field. So the nice thing about the Dirac fermion is there is a symmetry CT. It's basically a time reversal followed by a charge conjugation. That's a very simple symmetry. You don't have to do anything weird. It's just there in the Dirac fermion. And this CT symmetry is also preserved by turning on a magnetic field, because a magnetic field breaks time reversal and it also breaks charge conjugation, but the combination is preserved. Right? So under a magnetic field, I have a zero lambda level that by the CT symmetry is exactly half filled. So if the gap between the lambda levels are sufficiently large, I can so the low energy physics is essentially just controlled by this half field lambda level, which is really the same half field lambda level in, let's say, ordinary two-dimensional electron gas. Okay? But the nice thing is the particle hole symmetry, the CT, is manifestly kept even without having to go to the lowest lambda level restriction. If you like, this is a UV regularization of the particle hole symmetric half field lambda level problem with the nice feature that the particle hole symmetry is kept even in the UV. And the nice thing is, once we formulate this as a Dirac problem, we can use what we know for Dirac fermion to tackle this problem. And it turns out we know a lot about Dirac fermion. So this is the duality between a free Dirac fermion and a QED3 that Max just talked about before the break. Since Max has gone through the dictionary quite carefully, let me be quite brief about it. So the statement is, if I have a single Dirac fermion, it's basically dual to another Dirac fermion. I'll call this basically composite fermion, couples to a dynamical little U1 gauge field, little a. And the little a couples to the external. So essentially, the conservation of charge in the free Dirac theory becomes the conservation of magnetic flux for the emergent gauge field, little a. So I'll give you the dictionary. I'll show you the dictionary that's useful for my talk here. So if I have a finite magnetic field B, it turns out you can just take the equation of motion for little a on the right hand side, and you realize that what that gives you is a finite density for my composite fermion chi. This is really saying nothing but the chi fermion are 4 pi vortices of my original Dirac fermion. Okay? And also the CT symmetry, as Max has told you, get mapped to essentially a time reversal symmetry on my dual Dirac fermions. Okay, so this is a essentially a particle a fermionic sibling of the well-known particle vortex duality for bosonic systems. Let me note that this duality can be really formulated more precisely, but for this talk, I'm really interested in the gapless dynamics of my theory. So so this form is sufficient for that purpose. And once you accept the duality, the problem really becomes essentially a one-liner, right? Because in the dual picture, I have Dirac fermion with the emergent gauge field that couples the external gauge field this way. So if I have, as I said, if I have a finite field that just have a, I just have a finite vortex density, the finite density for my composite fermions. So the simplest solution you can guess is really just a Fermi surface made out of this Dirac fermions. And the particle hole symmetry acts very naturally because essentially I get a Dirac fermion with a finite chemical potential. But there I still have the time reversal symmetry acts in the standard way, which is Kramers on the t square root of minus one on this Dirac fermions. So the bottom line is really that in this picture, the composite fermions basically look like a surface of a topological insulator. So there I have a Dirac fermion with Kramers time reversal at finite chemical potential. Okay. So if I compare this with the standard HRR theory, there are two differences. So first of all, both have a Fermi surface, and both have an emergent dynamical U1 gauge field. But the difference is that in the HRR, there is a Chern-Simons term at level 1/2, if you remember. But in this approach, there's no such a thing. There's no Chern-Simons term. It's just Maxwell dynamics. But the Dirac fermion, you can ask, what do you mean by Dirac if it's at a finite chemical potential? At low energy, you don't see the cone. But what you do see is a Berry phase of pi on the Fermi surface. So that's absent in the traditional HRR theory. The traditional HRR Fermi surface is just a boring looking ordinary Fermi surface. Okay. So this has various consequences. Probably the most profound consequence of this pi Berry phase, which is a suppression of 2kF scattering essentially in particle hole symmetric channels, that has been observed numerically already. Lasik may be talking about this in his talk next. So essentially, it leads to a highly non-trivial prediction that's been basically observed. Okay. So that is the story of the composite fermion from the Dirac picture. So that much was done in last year. So now let me switch gear a little bit and tell you something that happened more recently. So let me ask the following question. So okay, the Dirac picture is great. It's manifestly particle hole symmetric. We love it. But what about the good old HRR? What's going on there? So if you take, as I said, if you take the Lagrangian for the HRR theory, it's a Fermi surface, an ordinary looking Fermi surface with a U1 gauge field with a Chern-Simons term. So you say, okay, it doesn't have particle hole symmetry, obviously. But that statement is really just saying the Lagrangian doesn't have the particle hole symmetry, right? But that's not the question. The question is, does the low energy physics have particle hole symmetry or not for this theory? Okay. And we've seen quite a few examples, including some mentioned by Nati yesterday, that there are theories that if you look at the Lagrangian, it doesn't have some symmetry. But if you actually look at the full theory, you realize that the symmetry is secretly compatible. So could that happen here? So to really tell, you have to actually calculate some observable quantities and tell whether the particle hole symmetry is there or not. So usually in a, for a strongly interacting gauge theory, that's hard. But this one, because we have a Fermi surface, in certain regime, the low energy physics is essentially a Fermi liquid-like. So there are quite a few things that we could actually calculate. And in fact, that was where the objection to HRR in terms of particle hole symmetry originally came from. It was argued in late 90s that if I want particle hole symmetry to hold, I want my Hall conductance sigma xy to be exactly 1/2, essentially 1/2 of the integer quantum Hall state. So if you go through the calculation, you realize that what that means is that in the presence of disorder, that's let's say statistically particle hole symmetric, I need my composite fermions to have a Hall conductance that's exactly minus 1/2. And that's where the confusion came in, because if I look at the HRR theory, it's just an ordinary looking quadratic Fermi surface. Certainly, you say you don't expect anomalous Hall conductance out of it. Right? And so that was raised as an evidence that HRR theory, when you calculate observables, will not be particle Hall symmetric. But is it true, really? So if you think about disorder, so first of all, this question, you can really pose it only in the presence of disorder. You cannot do a translationally invariant system and think about this. So let's think about disorder. So let's say if I have a very smooth disorder so that I can calculate things just from the in terms of the UV quantities. So if I have a disorder or impurity in HRR theory, essentially, the rule of flux attachment dictates that it will both be a random magnetic field, so a random curl cross little a, my emergent magnetic field, as well as a random potential. Whenever I have a fluctuation in the effective magnetic field seen by the composite fermions, I should also have a fluctuation of the density of composite fermions. That's dictated by the rule of flux attachment. Also, if you like, you get this from the HRR Lagrangian by taking the equation of motion for little a. So people knew that, certainly. But the traditional wisdom is that to leading order, you don't really have to worry about the potential part if you want to calculate, let's say, transport. Right? It's been argued for transport purposes, the dominating effect comes from the random magnetic field. Okay? So, which means to the leading order, if I only have randomly fluctuating magnetic field, then on average, I still have sort of time reversal symmetry for the composite fermions, and that leads to zero Hall conductance. It gives me some longitudinal conductivity that's of order KFL, where L is the mean free path for the composite fermions. So that's true to leading order. But the tricky thing is the question we're asking about is not for leading order. It's not at order KFL. It's of order 1. So you really have to go beyond leading order to see that effect. So once you go beyond leading order, you really have to take the density fluctuation together with the field fluctuation into the problem. And once you have this, effectively you break the average time reversal symmetry for the composite fermion problem, and you do expect an anomalous Hall conductance of order 1 here. Even though your Fermi surface itself is an ordinary looking boring Fermi surface, but this special form of disorder gives you a Hall conductance of order 1. Well, that much is fine. The real magic is that if you actually go ahead and calculate, you realize it's exactly minus 1/2, at least to that order. Right? You can do it in certain approximation scheme, let's say semi-classical or Born. It doesn't really matter. As long as you can calculate it, you get this answer, which is a magic, really. So it's saying that somehow, secretly, the particle Hall symmetry seemed to work out in this case. Even though by looking at the Lagrangian, you certainly don't expect that. Right? You say, OK, so maybe HRR secretly knows about the single lambda level limit. There you have particle Hall symmetry. So maybe it will work out. But it goes even better than that. Because when you look at the calculation, which I'm not showing you, and I have no intention to show you that, but if you actually look at the calculation, you realize that you don't even need the strict single lambda level limit. You can just have a finite Bayer mass and you still have that. So that seems to say that not only does the HR seem to be compatible, at least in low energy in the IR, with particle Hall symmetry, even if you don't have particle Hall symmetry to start with in the UV, let's say I have Landau level mixing, all that, this effective particle Hall symmetry still comes back when you go to the low energy DC limit. Okay? So the lesson is, contrary to what people believed in the 90s, not only does HRR work, it works better than it has any right to be. Okay? So that's one puzzle. The other observable, so that's Hall conductance. So the other observable you can calculate, even without this order, is what's known as the magneto-roton minimum. So it's okay, if you, for those of you who don't know what this is, that's fine. You don't have to. It's basically just some gapped excitations in a gap state, in a, let's say a nearby Jane state. So if I go to a Jane state at P minus two, P over two P plus one filling, so in general I get some, so my low energy excitation will be some gapped excitation with the dispersion minimum at some finite momentum. So there was the so essentially in the composite fermion picture, you can view this basically as some exciton-like excitations of the composite fermion, some particle Hall excitation. And at large P, meaning if you are close to the Hopf filling, so you can essentially calculate everything from the properties near Fermi surface. So you can do a, let's say, even a semi-classical calculation that was done in the 90s, more than 20 years ago. So you get the momentum that corresponds to a certain minimum that's proportional to 1 over P. Okay? And remember that the particle Hall symmetry is stating that a Jane state at P should be conjugate to a Jane state at minus P minus 1. So if you just stare at this expression, you say, OK, aha, there's an asymmetry between P and minus P minus 1, certainly. But not so fast, because this calculation was to leading order in 1 over P. But the asymmetry, of course, is to order 1 over P squared. So to really tell if there is a particle Hall asymmetry or not, you really have to go beyond the leading order. You have to go and calculate things to order 1 over P squared. Well, another magic happened. I'm not going to show you the procedure, which is not very illuminating anyway. The magic is that if you actually do an honest calculation to the next leading order, you realize the two are actually the same, at least to order 1 over P squared. That was far from obvious if you just look at the equations that led to this result, but it worked. And again, this result also doesn't need the strict single Landau level limit. Finite bare electron mass is totally okay. So again, it looks like, if you look at this quantity, it looks like the HRR can be particle Hall symmetric, at least in low energy. Okay? Even if you don't build in the symmetry all the way in the IR, in the UV. So those were just some honest calculation. I'm just reporting my calculation. But now let me do something slightly more crazy. So let me postulate a duality. That the idea is that these results are crazy. So let me postulate something that's crazy but slightly less crazy to make sense of it. Okay? So let me postulate the following duality. So if I have an HRR theory, which is really an ordinary Fermi surface coupled to a U1 gauge field with Chern-Simons term, and the Dirac composite Fermi liquid, which is just a Dirac Fermi surface coupled to a dynamical U1 gauge field but with no Chern-Simons term, clearly in the UV, if you define with the Maxwell term and all that finite effective mass, so on, clearly in the UV there are different theories. But the postulate is that if I flow all the way to the IR, so if I concentrate on fermions just near the Fermi surface and concentrate on modes of the gauge field that are at long wavelength, they probably are dual. The IR physics are probably the same. So So now let me try to convince you that this is not as crazy as it sounds. So first of all, we know since day one that the two theories will have more or less the same phase diagram, meaning their deformations or nearby phases are identical. Those are just the familiar Jane states or, if you like, paired Pfaffian states or their variants. And if you think about IR physical observables, so for these two theories, there is a luxury that we usually don't have. That is, there are some quantities that you can calculate on both sides quite reliably. Okay. The two quantities I showed you are among them, like transport or excitation spectrum. So those quantities that you can calculate, they do seem to agree from both pictures. If you like, the only serious objection to this duality is that there is a symmetry, namely particle hole, that's manifest in the Dirac picture. That is not manifest at all in the HR picture. But okay, so but the calculation I showed you, I didn't show you the calculation, I showed you the result of the calculation, seems to be compatible with that symmetry. So it has a chance, it has a decent chance to emerge, for the symmetry to emerge in IR. And through the past year, we've seen many such examples in the dualities among between relativistic field theories. But I would say this duality is somewhat unconventional because a Fermi surface is involved in a crucial way in the story. So there is no relativistic counterpart of this duality, if you like to put it that way. Because if I tune the my fermion density all the way to zero, it doesn't make any sense. Right? There, I still have a Dirac cone in this picture, but here, there's nothing. So it doesn't make sense in the zero density limit, certainly. So somehow the magic of a Fermi surface must kick in and make this duality possible. So it's intrinsically a non-relativistic compressible state duality. The thing that we don't understand is that if you ask me exactly how the two are related, because for the other dualities, we know maybe one is the vortex of the other or so on. Here, I don't have such a story. So that's something I would very much like to understand better. But suppose I take this duality. Suppose I buy it. What do I get out of it? So first of all, this means that HR theory, even though when it was formulated, wasn't in the single Landau level limit, but maybe at the end of the day, as an effective theory, it's okay even in the single Landau level limit. If you calculate things, it seems to make sense. More positively, the Dirac composite Fermi liquid is also is applicable even when I have finite electron mass, even when I have finite Landau level mixing, because in the low energy is essentially due to HR. Right? So that's a good news because I know that I will have emergent particle hole symmetry anyway, even when I have a finite bare electron mass if I go to low energy. So that it's a great news in the sense that now if I meet an experimentalist, I don't have to tell him if you tune your electron mass all the way down to zero, you will see this. This is much easier. So, and the two previous puzzles can be easily explained because the two previous quantities are all IR quantities. They're at low frequency, small momentum. And there you expect identical results from the Dirac side, which obviously give you particle symmetric results. So you can, so that's for half-field Landau level. So you can generalize this story quite straightforwardly to essentially any compressible state, any composite Fermi liquid state at Filling fraction 1 over n, or if you have even n, you are dealing with an electron system. If you have odd n, you are dealing with a bosonic system, either in code atom or in a computer. Right. So for this theory, of course, we can do the HRR theory, which is a Fermi surface, a boring Fermi surface, that couples to a dynamical gauge field with Chern-Simon term level 1 over n. It follows very similar logic. You get a dual description in terms of just a Fermi surface couples to a dynamical gauge field, but no Chen Simons term. Rather, you have a Fermi surface Berry phase that's equal to minus 2 pi over n for the Fermi surface Berry phase. Okay. So Sandel and I came up with this theory. We call it quantum vortex theory of compulsive Fermi liquid from a slightly different perspective. At that time, we were thinking that the magic of the restriction to a single Landau level may enforce you to have something like this rather than the traditional HR picture. But maybe even at finite electron mass with Landau level mixing and so on, for an IR theory, for a low energy theory, this may still be a good theory. So this does come with certain predictions, especially for transport. For example, it's fairly easy to show, essentially from the Fermi surface Berry phase, that if I measure the thermal Hall conductance, I should get something like this, where nu is the filling fraction. And if I have unpolarized spin, if I have totally unpolarized spin, then I should have a spin Hall conductance that's equal to minus nu. So that's exactly opposite of the charge Hall conductance. And also, this essentially comes just from the Berry phase of the composite Fermi surface. There's no effort to get this. You don't need any effort to get this. But if you are willing to work slightly harder, like this gentleman did, you get a non-zero Nernst effect for the composite Fermi liquids. And the nice thing is you get it from either picture, either from this Berry phase, Fermi surface Berry phase picture, or from the old HR picture. But of course, if you try to get this from the HR, you have to work much harder. Even if you get the result, you can't stop asking yourself why the result is so simple. Right? There must be some conspiracy going on. But in the Berry phase picture, you get this very naturally. So with that, I think my time is basically up. So you can read the summary here, and thank you.
Maybe I'll start on this side, Leo.
So in HLR theory, there is these notorious divergences, infrared divergences you get, like
okay. Mass. So
can you use your Dirac theory to make sense of them? And
let me make one point. So I cheated a little bit in both theories. So if I honestly have just Maxwell dynamics to begin with for the little a, I get funny things in the IR. They are believed to be non-Fermi liquid and all that. I have to deal with all of them. So let me cheat by saying I actually have a long-range interaction. So it's known that if I have Coulomb interaction, then the divergence is like almost controlled. But let me go even further. Let me say my interaction is longer range than Coulomb. So then everything is supposed to be Fermi liquid. Like I can calculate, trust the result. That's the regime where I'm talking about. Yeah, because if it's just Maxwell, I don't know. I really don't know.
Duncan, can you give it to him?
Well, of course, there's a general principle that which seems to be quite general, that if you've got a Fermi surface, you get the Berry in 2D, the Berry phase for going around it is identically gives you the non-quantized part of sigma xy, and we know what sigma xy is exactly at half filling, so it actually doesn't depend on it being, the fact you get a phase shift of pi does not depend on you being particle Hall symmetric.
That's what I'm saying here, because here I don't need the zero mass limit.
Well, so we sort of knew that already, so in some sense, it's not really a duality between theories. Any theory with a Fermi surface doesn't care about anything away from the Fermi. The whole effect is completely determined by the Berry phase at the Fermi surface. It really doesn't matter what happens far away to get sigma xy.
Yeah, I agree. It's
electrons,
But you have to be a little bit careful.
Seems like it's a general principle.
Right? No, but that,
and
strictly
it's,
speaking,
and it seems to show up in the model wave function.
One thing I should emphasize is that this composite fermions, they don't couple to the external.
I'm talking about the real fermions.
Yeah, the real fermions, there's no Fermi C for the real fermions. Right? So you have to talk about composite fermions, there's a Fermi C, but they don't couple to the electromagnetic.
Surface, so this is a general principle that whatever the excitation that the quasi particle, the very phase for going around the Fermi surface will give you that sigma x bar. That doesn't require you to know anything about what happens away from the Fermi surface. So it doesn't really comment on whether there's a Dirac cone or not.
Doesn't just sigma depend on those indications of the external electromagnetic? These ones don't.
Yeah. These ones, they couple to the little a. They don't couple to the capital A.
Well, it seems to come out of a general result for taking a quasi-particle around the Fermi surface.
But I can give you a Fermi surface with different very
phases. Yeah, for example, if you go to the HLR picture, there's no very phase.
The HLR picture, as a Lagrangian, is not a microscopic picture, but the wave functions based on the HLR idea.
I'm focusing basically entirely on the low energy effective theory. I'm not worrying about Lagrangian at this point. Because one thing is, when I say they are dual, I only mean in the IR. I'm not saying they are dual in the UV, which is a much stronger statement. I'm not making that statement.
Yeah. I think there was another question. Was it Chenke? Okay, let's Chenke and here.
Okay, so do you have a Lagrangian field theory for your new equals to 1 over n composite fermion?
This one?
Yeah, this one.
Yeah, that. I mean, so this is the shorthand notation for the Lagrangian. You have a Fermi surface with a Bury phase, then the gauge field.
Right, but actually, so for the Dirac fermion, the Fermi surface Dirac fermion, actually the Bury phase is a fixed number, right? But now you have a
So what I'm talking about is a theory for electrons. For the composite fermions just near the Bury phase. Just near the Fermi surface, right? So if you're talking about Dirac versus non-Dirac, you're asking for a UV completion of this Fermi surface.
Right.
So that one, you don't get a very nice one. The closest one you can get is a gapped Dirac cone with a fine-tuned MOS. So if you like, you can UV complete in that way. Then add some transignment term and all that. But for low energy theory, you don't really need that.
Yeah, but that's a Dirac fermion. So if you consider like Dirac fermion like a UV completion, does that give you this Bury phase at all?
With a fine-tuned mass and chemical potential.
Fine-tuned mass. So what do you mean?
If you have a gap Dirac fermion and a chemical potential, in general,
By tuning mu and n.
But you don't really have to do that.
We'll take one from that side and then we'll do Natty and Max.
When you say that there is a emergent particle hole symmetry in HLR, presumably if you work hard enough, go to high enough.
We don't know. I cannot say that statement. I cannot guarantee you that if I. Okay, yeah. So the question is for example, here I said if you calculate to order 1 over p squared, you get particle hole symmetry. The question is if I go to 1 over p cubed or 4th, is it still there? That I really don't know because from HR, everything. The particle hole thing is so non-manifest that I cannot say anything before I actually calculate. So I don't know. But the conjecture is if they are really dual, then you probably should be. It probably should be.
But in all of these theories, if you view them as effective theories, right? There are some quartic interactions that you need to add, and there are all sorts of perturbations. Presumably one might need to kind of fine-tune some of them to.
Yeah, if you go to high order, you may, because if you're going far and further and further away from the deep IR limit, all those kind of things. Oh, the Fermi. Oh, yes. No. Sorry. Yeah, Fermi liquid parameters you have to include. Yeah, for this quantity, not really in this order, but probably in higher orders you need. For example, if you calculate AC transport, you definitely need to include that.
And that works out to.
That actually works out in some trivial sense. If you calculate, let's say the AC Hall conductance for this guy, then there's some very simple requirement. essentially from Galilean invariants, saying that the AC Hall conductance should not be identical to 1/2 unless you tune the bare mass all the way to zero. So that part works out. Yeah.
So yes. In various places you had fermions with or without k equals 1/2.
Yeah.
Term.
Yeah.
Now, I assume you use the convention where the fermion determinant is real and this is something that is
added. Yeah, yeah, yeah. The old convention. Yeah.
Okay. Then I don't understand the duality that you propose.
Yes.
Okay. So on the right, you added this thing with 1/2.
Yes.
To the thing which uses the old convention. And yeah. In the left, do you add it or not?
No. So, okay. So in the convention that, in the precise convention, actually.
No, you can use this convention. Actually.
Okay. All right. So in this convention, I have a Dirac fermion, but no transimons.
And it couples to little a.
And it couples to little a.
And you don't, you do not add the 1/8.
I do not add 1/8 pi. But here I have an ordinary Fermi surface, but with the 1/8 pi. So if you use the eta, here I'm.
I'm happy with that. But
okay.
In the old convention, you would say that the left side is not consistent.
Sure. I mean, we know how to, make sense of how to redefine this to make it fully.
In the old convention, the right side is meaningful. In the old convention, you say that the fermion is not gauge invariant, and therefore you need to add level 1/2 transimons.
Here is an ordinary. Sorry. Yeah, okay, maybe that's the confusion. This is not a Dirac fermion. This is an ordinary, like, Galilean, Schrodinger-like fermion.
Doesn't matter.
No. This one, it will be totally gauge invariant.
I have no problem with this. I have a problem with the left side.
Sorry. They both have the... So here, you don't have the transimons, but you have a single Dirac. Here, you have a totally legitimate fermion, but you have a half-level transimons. They can be cured in the same way. You write this instead of... You introduce a U1 level -2 and couple to the little a in the way we discussed.
So what is the Lagrangian on the right?
Yeah, the Lagrangian, okay. Here. So it's just an... yeah, so... So it's something like minus upside dagger. Psi over m. Sorry, you upgrade all this to a covariant derivative. That's the Lagrangian. Yeah. So this one has no anomaly whatsoever. So, in a sense, this has to be true because the anomaly, I mean, it's not really an anomaly, but the anomaly of the two sides should match. If they are illegal, they should be illegal in the same way.
So could you put the proposed duality that you proposed in your talk in the context of what Dittison proposed, right? Because I'm a bit lost what the distinction
it's,
is.
It's a little bit different. So I for the Dirac story, I used the duality that Max talked about. So
yes.
The later one I talk about is a totally different thing.
Right, but could you summarize in words? The Dittison's duality suggests that half-filled Landau level can be understood as a Dirac fermion with a finite chemical potential.
Right.
Aren't you saying exactly the same thing?
No. I'm saying that thing you probably can understand equally well with HAR theory.
Okay. Right. So the new pieces that you're saying that could I rephrase what you're saying is that Dittison's duality could also be understood that it's in your proposal that it's equivalent to a low infrared limit of the HLR.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Basically.
So that's the new piece compared to.
Yeah.
So how do you reconcile the T-Fafian in the old HLR?
Oh, no, the thing is, to get the T5N order by itself, it's pretty simple in the HR. You just get some P minus or plus, I forgot the sign, P minus IP pairing instead of the usual P plus IP. But the tricky thing is, how do you see the time reversal there? The thing is, in HR, even if the particle hole symmetry is there, it's so non-manifest that it's probably not a good idea to try to figure out exactly how time reversal acts on this field.
But the Fafian seed itself breaks time reversal symmetry, right? If you
write Fafian does, but T-Fafian doesn't. So the difference is whether you put the HR fermion into a P plus IP or a P minus IP superconductor.
So the predictions for both kappa XY and the Nernst are identical?
Identical.
Both?
Yeah.
So there's no point doing the experiment, right?
The thing is, we didn't know any of this. We didn't know any of this before last year, let's say.
I see.
Even in HR. So HR is a, like, two or three decade old theory, but the surprise is we actually figured out this quite recently. And it's quite complicated to do this in HR, but it's a no-brainer in the new formulation.
Maybe I can ask you a question.
Yes.
So the conditions under which you can, you know, calculate the sigma xy is minus half. So it's some weak.
Smooth
disorder.
Yeah.
So is there a regime where you can still meaningfully talk about HLR theory, like a disorder profile which is still consistent with quasi-particles and stuff like that, but which is not covered by your calculation? I just wonder if there is.
I can't pull it out of my head, but there are several length scales. These calculations are only strictly valid if you have certain order of the length scale. Mm-hmm. So in other length scale, we actually don't know. For example, if you have if the length scale of the disorder fluctuation is much larger than everything else, we don't have a justifiable calculation.
Mm-hmm. So there may still be some regime where the two may differ, even for DC transport.
Yeah, we just don't know.
Okay, so maybe we can move on to the next talk. Thank you, Chong.